Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Good morning.
Oh, well, hello. Sorry.
It was a bit weird because usually half will say good morning to me and I sort of don't really know what I'm doing.
There was a bit of half there. You were good early. He was up.
Yeah, and then Rammer put me off.
Yeah, he did. He does that a lot. Morning, Adam.
Good morning, Scotty. I thought Waddy was doing sort of like an opener, waiting for music after he said it.
I thought there was going to be a bit of like a...
Yeah, sort of like he was waiting for another sting and then into Scotty.
Right.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all right. No, it's great to be here. I did the right thing by Australian cricket last night.
Well, at what time did you go to the end?
No. Sleep. Because, you know, I've had an issue with turning it on and we lose wickets.
Yeah.
I was in bed at 9 o'clock, knew nothing. No, I know nothing
Zero.
About what happened.
Okay.
I just sacrificed myself.
Yeah. I went to tea and then fell asleep during tea.
Who was still, was head out then? No.
Yeah. Payne and Khawaja were still batting.
And I owe the Australian captain a minor apology. I may have been a bit harsh at him a couple of days ago on Tim.
You may have been.
Calling for his head.
Well,
because I said this was the time when you got to stand up. And he did.
It was, look, it's significant if you consider.
Oh, it's massive.
If you consider the first innings, 10 for 60 we lost.
Correct.
So, you know, massive cross in the first innings and then a big tick in the second innings, albeit it's probably, you know, due to five of them, Finch faced 100 balls. Khawaja faced 302 balls. The Marshes made blobs.
Well, terrible.
Travis Head has faced 175 balls. That was a significant innings, Whitey, as you mentioned on Twitter yesterday. And then Tim Payne, he was a wall.
The symmetry for Langer's first
spot on.
Game
and that's
coach.
That's what I was going to.
It just sets it, doesn't
point.
It?
Well, it was a Justin Langer like performance.
It was fantastic. I didn't believe it. I woke up. Checked the phone, thought, oh, you know, they'll get to 300 and it'll be all over.
So you would have loved to have been a fly on the wall before they went into bat in that second innings.
Mm.
We're all sitting there going, there's no way known they're going to last. What was it?
Australian
four
teams.
Sessions or?
140 overs.
Yeah, 140 so overs. There's
Australian
no
teams
way
don't do that. The last decade? Even our best teams don't do this.
No, but I'm tipping Langer would have whipped them up into a frenzy before that and said, look, we can do this.
And the other symmetry is one of our more flighty characters, Usman. Mm. Yeah, we've been critical of him being...
Is he?
Critically of him just being lazy outside off stump and...
Yeah.
Well, he is. It's his first century overseas.
Yeah.
I think he's got a rep as being a bit lazy. And fitness-wise, we know Justin came in and said, come on, trim, 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 lost 7 kgs.
Yeah.
I thought his rep was a beautiful stroke maker who can get lazy and go out with a lazy shot.
And I think that's certainly been his reputation. I think that's slightly unfair.
Harsh.
Yeah, I think he's been... We'll talk to John Hastings about this when he comes in after 7:30, but I think he's been a bit of a whipping boy for Australian cricket.
Well, he couldn't play spin a couple of years ago, suddenly he can.
Yeah, look, he's had some issues with spin, but so has everybody else. But often when Australians have struggled... He's been the one that stood up. So I still go back to that horrendous test match in Tasmania at Belrive Oval when he was the one that actually got runs and everyone else was horrendous around him. So, yeah, it's an interesting one with Khawaja. I mean, he's played 34 test matches and averages 44.
So,
his record's excellent at home and it has been poor away. But, yeah, I often think he gets unfairly treated. But the interest to me... was not so much the fact that they held on for a draw, it's how they did it.
Mm.
And they broke all sorts of records in the process. But what they did was they respected the game. They respected the conditions. They respected the opposition. When Tim Payne defended what ultimately became the last ball, there was no fanfare as such. It was just, you know, it was respect again. They didn't win. They didn't lose.
His comments after were good, wasn't it? Yeah. It was, we didn't win, but we did well to draw.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was just everything that made you, proud of your Australian cricket team again. And that hasn't happened for a long time. And it felt weird. I'll be honest with you. It felt weird.
To feel warm and fuzzy.
That's right. And if you look at what it represents, new captain Tim Payne, new leader Usman Khawaja opening the batting, which is not something he would normally do. Travis Head batted extremely well to get through on the first night and then back that up and make 70-odd into the second innings and, you know, look good. It was the new guys. And it was so it was really it, I don't know I felt really good about it.
Was there a moment when Khawaja was still in? Did we ever, you know, a sniff of oh we might get 400?
No, and, no. They needed
never quite got to that.
They needed 170 runs in the last session, so it was.
What was that 20? How many overs was the last session? Was, 30. Well,
yeah, it ended up it was about 32 overs. So a very similar equation to when Australia won that unlikely Test match against England at the Adelaide Oval. But with the conditions the way they were.
And they didn't have Gilchrist.
No, or Hussey, or that sort of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just Khawaja, 141 off 302 balls, 524 minutes in that heat.
In my maths, that's a lot of hours.
Travis Head faced 175 balls in his 72 with 197 minutes at the crease, just five fours. And then Tim Payne, 61 not out off 194 balls and 219 minutes. And then they had this little bit of an issue late because Stark was out for one to Yasir Shah and then Siddle, LBW, to Yasir Shah for zero. So, again, they lost three for nothing pretty much. And then Nathan Lyon was able to last 48 minutes and 34 deliveries for his five. And they ended up 8 for 362.
Was there any controversy? Because they would have run out of reviews, wouldn't they, at some point? And...
yeah, look, one of the big problems for Pakistan was the captain, Sarfraz.
Actually, that's the bit I saw, him whinging about
that. Very emotional captain.
He wandered up and having a go at the umpie, and the umpie's going, move on, go away.
He had to go at his own players, and it's quite entertaining, but it made it difficult for Pakistan. But I still go back to what they did in the third innings. They batted far too long and far too slowly. You know, in that third innings when you sort of set up the game, but they should bat like a T20 game and keep the game moving rather than do what teams often do.
Plotting to 160 just take too long. And
it's easy in hindsight, obviously, and I don't think anyone thought that Australia would bat five sessions, but you give them, you know, you try and give them as much time as possible. I'm not sure they did that. Anyway, a draw, a fantastic result for Australian cricket, and they move on to another one. There's only a two-test series. That's in Abu Dhabi, the second test, and it starts
on
the weekend.
So, my man Marnus failed. So, does he move on? Who? Renshaw back in?
I don't know whether they'll change it now.
I don't think they'll change either.
But did Marnus look in place? I'd say no.
No, but it was his first test. He, you know, he could bowl a bit on these.
You give him another test.
Yeah. Now, we're a little bit intimidated here this morning because someone's come in dressed very well, Scotty.
Luckily, there's no cameras in here and they see what I bring to the table most mornings.
But right.
Dunk, welcome.
Duncan McKenzie McCarg in the studio.
Good morning, guys. How are you going? Beautiful, beautiful morning here in Melbourne. Great to be back in Melbourne.
Oh, he's too up and about, too.
I'm so sorry. I've been up since 4 a.m. I've been jet-lagged as all.
Tell us about it.
Just before we get into the...
I think Dunk thinks the races are today. sort of tomorrow.
Well, here's my first name drop from the morning. Eddie Maguire once said to me that if you don't dress serious, then no one will take you seriously.
Gee, Scotty and I.
So I now wear a suit to the beach.
Well, that's why our main man over here, Adam White, went to the Gazman Frenzy yesterday.
He does look very spiffy. That's a beautiful shirt there.
We've got to go back to that later frenzy. On the program. Doug, so
the Gaz Frenzy.
You have the best job in world journalism. You know that.
It's how did pretty it happen? Handy.
Who pays you?
And clip it from everywhere I can. I'm just trying to keep it afloat at the moment. Well, it's one of these situations where I'm sort of employed by Fox Sports. I'm employed by The Tab. And I'm employed a little bit by a couple of radio stations all across Australia. And I kind of just piece it all together and try to get to as many events as I can. And I've been managing to stay afloat for the last 18 to 20 months.
Whose idea or who did anyone come to you? You thought there's a gap in this, I could maybe make it work. How did it happen?
Yeah, it actually happened a little bit by default. So at the end of 2016, when Donald Trump got elected US president, I went to Channel 10 because I was working at 10 at the time. And I said to the guys, look, this guy's been elected president. He's going to be the news for the next 4 years.
The world's gone mad.
Totally. And Channel 10 at the time didn't have a US correspondent overseas. So I said to the guys, why don't I go over there? And I went over with a cameraman who I'd never met before, who was from Canberra. And I said, why don't we become a freelance team? And they said, yep, go for it. So then they wrote us out a 5-year visa. We went over there, and as we know what happened with Channel 10, unfortunately, they went into voluntary administration, and all of a sudden there was no work for me after 3 months. So I picked up my whole life, moved it over to the United States of America, had to pay rent, and then within 3 months the rug was pulled out from underneath me. So I thought, well, I need to come up with a plan B here. And I was noticing the growing interest from Australia in US sport, especially Aussie athletes doing big stuff over in America. So what I did is I actually spoke to Fox Sports News and I cold called them one morning and I said to the channel manager at the time, Kurt Jones, Kurt, do you reckon you might be able to fudge a bit of a credential for the NBA finals? And I could see if I can get on the NBA finals for it. And he said, well, we can't guarantee you any work, but I'll fill out the credential anyway. So what I did within the space of 2 months, I learned how to shoot. I learned how to edit. I bought a live view, which enabled me to go live back to Melbourne in Australia and back to Sydney from California. And then I put myself on the NBA finals floor for game one and I rang up Kurt and I said to him, mate, I'm here. I'm ready to do a cross. I've got some talent. Do you want something for Fox Sports? And he said, absolutely, but we're not going to pay for it. And I said, that's fine. You can have this one for free. Oh. And then from there, I did that game and then I did game two. I think in game three, I managed to nab Charles Barkley in a one-on-one. And then after that, Fox said, okay, we'll go to the next event. Yeah, did the Open Championship, did the PGA Championship in Charlotte, and Mayweather-McGregor fight in Las Vegas. And
So you moved from LA, then you moved to Detroit when obviously no one was paying you, then you moved back to LA.
Yeah, a little bit like that, and especially the rental prices, Rama, in LA. I mean, they're not very friendly.
Tell us about how you get access to these people, because I think that's... The two most impressive things are whenever you look up on the TV of a morning, you know, it's a bit weird seeing you in here because, oh, geez, how's he there? And then all of a sudden he's there, you're at Wimbledon, you're at, you know, everywhere. Mm. But how do you get access to the people you talk to?
You certainly got to leverage off the Fox brand and name in the United States. I mean, Fox, ESPN is the largest TV network in the world. It's bigger than CNN, it's bigger than BBC, it's bigger than Sky. But Fox Sports is the second biggest US sports network. Yep. So if you fill out a credential form and you put Duncan McKenzie McCarg Fox Sports, you're immediately through the door. So that gets you the access in the door. But once you're inside the door, that's when you have to work your tail off and try and convince people to talk to you, because a lot of the time they feel there's no interest for them to talk to you. Why should I speak to Australia?
I was going to say, do you put Fox Sports Australia or Fox Sports US?
Fox Sports. I just put Fox Sports. If you put Fox Sports Australia... Line through your name.
Yeah. All right. Now, top three moments. I think, I heard you on the radio and Tiger Woods walked past somewhere and you just sort of basically stopped talking.
Froze. Froze.
It was great live radio. It was like, Is he, what are your top three moments? Or interviews?
Yep.
Or access that you've pulled off?
Probably in terms of the Tiger, I'll tell you the Tiger story. So, Wednesday before the tournament, I try to tee up a one-on-one with Tiger Woods, and he's managed by one of the biggest power golf agents in Mark Steinberg. Steinberg effectively rebuffed me, told me, no chance, kid, go away.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, that's no good. But leading into the tournament, I thought, well, Tiger Woods is a fairly good chance of winning the Tour Championship. I mean, he's been threatening to win for a while. So I butted up the PGA Tour, and I said, guys, am I any chance of having a chat to the winner? And they said, you're a rough chance. Put yourself in position come Sunday and see what happens. After round one, Tiger's co-leading. After round two, Tiger's co-leading. After round three, Tiger's winning by three shots. Walking down the 18th, you've seen the scenes, the galleries, the crowd. Everything's enormous. It's Tiger mania. Totally bananas. So I thought, I've got to be in position here, be ready just in case this happens. Put myself in position. Next to me, CNN, Golf Channel, ESPN Sports Center, PGA Tour walks past and they say, who are you, mate? And I say, I'm sitting up in position. One of your colleagues said I could interview the winner, and it happens to be Tiger, so I guess I'm interviewing Tiger. Anyway, so get in position. He said, I'm not really sure about that, but just stick around. Tiger does the media center. He does CNN, does Golf Channel, and does ESPN Sports Center. And Tiger was in a fairly good mood, as you can imagine, with his first win in 5 years. So Steinberg says to Tiger, hey, Tiger, do you want to go and do Australia? And Tiger says, okay.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and had 3 minutes with a great man.
So that's Tiger. You've spoken to a number of the big NBA stars, the NFL stars, all sorts of other things. What a bit like Scotty, what are some of the other highlights that you didn't think were possible, or you look back and go, geez, I can't believe I've actually done that?
Yeah,
Yeah, I think it's just it's a matter of persistence and determination. I mean, a lot of the time you're going to get rejected. I mean, it's just one of these situations where when I interviewed Steve Kerr after the NBA Finals, like when Golden State had just swept Cleveland, I was rejected by the NBA and the Warriors probably 4 or 5 times before they said, "Oh, just have him okay for 2 minutes." I was in a situation where Kerr was going from TV network to TV network all across the arena floor in Cleveland. And the Warriors are saying, "Go away, he's not going to talk to you. You're not a rights holder. You're a one-man band. Who is this guy? Can you get him away from me?" But I picked up my camera and my tripod and my microphone, and I was walking behind Steve Kerr and following him to all these different TV networks, hoping that he'd have 2 minutes spare free with me. And when he eventually stopped, and he did, when he was speaking with his wife, Margot, I butted up his wife, Margot, and I said, "Margot, when are you going to come to Australia?
Oh, right,
blah, 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 blah. Who are you? You're an Aussie guy?" "Yeah, I'm here from Australia with Fox Sports Australia." You get a bit of a rapport with these guys. All of a sudden, "Yeah, I'll do 2 minutes with this guy." 2 minutes is all you need in the game, and easy. Away you go.
There is a lot of pressure on this man, Dean Lester, because he needs to find us plenty of winners for tomorrow at the races. So we are betting at about 8:30 somewhere tomorrow night. Good morning to you, Dino.
Oh, I've got one in that time frame, Whitey, but the earlier part's a bit harder.
Now, when we think of Caulfield Guineas Day, it's obviously one of the biggest days on the racing calendar, and where does it sit for you?
Look, I think the best day I've ever had at the races was Caulfield Guineas Day about 2009 or 10, when in about an hour and a half period I saw Black Caviar win, So You Think win, and More Joyous win the Toorak. I think that was racing as good as it got, really.
Yeah.
So it's always a very special day.
And I guess it's one of those days also where stories unfold, because a couple of horses can really announce themselves, not only for their careers, but also just for the Spring Carnival.
Yep, absolutely. And, when there's so many different stories, you know, the Herbert Power gets you into the Caulfield Cup and might get you elevated into the position for a Melbourne Cup. So, even the last race of the day has got a real importance with regard to the spring.
Nick Quinn, welcome.
Thank you, Adam.
Trent did a really good job last week, so you decided you'd have to make sure you're back this week.
Well, I thought Seeing Tomorrow is possibly the best day's racing anywhere in the world in 2018 that I would make an appearance, because it's going to be absolutely sensational. 10 of the best at Caulfield, throw in the best up in Sydney as well. So it's going to be absolutely huge, and hopefully everyone can be talking about racing for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we want to get straight into it because there's so many races we want to look at. We're going to start with the Quaddie Legs, and then we'll kind of look at some of the other big races across the program, and a sneaky look at the Everest as well, because obviously that's going to be a huge day, not only in Sydney, but really from an Australian perspective. But it starts off the Quaddie Race 7 tomorrow with 10 races on the program. It's the Toorak Handicap, $500,000, a Group 1 race over 1,600 metres. We might go through the odds first, Quinny, and then we'll get Dino's thoughts.
Okay, taking a look at the market, there's a couple of the big names at the pointy end of the market, and the money has come for Shillelagh, who's been $8.50 into $5. Now the favourite at that quote, Hartnell, the only other runner in single figure odds there at $6.50. If you're chasing a roughie, there has been a little bit of money around for Jungle Cat, who's been $12 into $10. Was specced at big odds when winning first up.
Dino, your thoughts on the first leg of the Quaddie?
Well, I mean, always a tough race, massive field, a lot of pressure in this race. There's a lot of go-forward horses, and they've all drawn wide, so they've got to press on. So I think the pressure will be high, and I actually think the outside draw will be not as big a disadvantage as it looks for Land of Plenty, and I think he'll win his Group 1 tomorrow. I think even though I'm going to go wide in the Quaddie, I'm quite keen on Land of Plenty. Number 5 to beat Cliff's Edge, his stable mate. He's just a good horse at 1,600 metres, a good horse any time, really, and 52 kilos on his back. I think he'll be one of those pressing on, but I think he'll be one of the ones sticking on at the finish. I think there's a really good roughie in this race, and that's 15 Radipole. I think finally drawn a good gate with a high pressure up, it could run a good race. Shillelagh, I understand the backing for her. She's flying, and the top two of the class runners, I'll be putting them in the Quaddie, but I'm happy to be with Land of Plenty as a top selection there.
Dino's on top selection, Land of Plenty at $6.50, but the roughie, Radipole, a $61 chance if you don't mind, so might be worth looking at there, especially if you even want to have a little place bet, Adam White, at the big odds currently available.
All right, Scotty, you've got to ask the questions here for Dino.
No, I'm just contemplating life here. Hell of a street, Dino. last prep, has it come back as good this prep, or am I being a bit harsh?
He's just in the big league now.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, he's a really good group two, maybe group three horse now. He's got to go to group one, and he'll be in that group of horses leaders that are pressing forward. Yeah, dollar for dollar, him, I'm a Star, Cliff's Edge, El Passam, Lightning in My Veins, Blackheart, Bart, Siege of Quebec. They're all on pace runners, so that group of eight will really press early.
Well, if you're an I'm a Star lover, it's going for three in a row and it's 20 to 1.
Yeah, beaten in this race last year and well beaten, but probably at the end of her preparation. Just wonder where she sort of gets to from that draw, because I don't know if she can quite cross with that main group.
All right, so Dino at this stage going with 1, 2, 4, 5, 12 and 15 for those that are wanting to play the early quaddies. And, of course, don't forget tomorrow morning, Dino will formalise his tips with the Melbourne panel from after 8 o'clock on RSN 927. Okay, the second leg of the quaddie, it's another group one. It's the Ladbrokes Caulfield Stakes over 2,000 metres, and again, a really good looking field here. Quinny, what are the odds before we look at Dino's thoughts?
The Chris Waller duo head the market. D'Argento's been 750 into 420, now outright favourite at that price. Unforgotten a 480 second elect. Ben Battle's been 750 into 550. Humidor 750. Night's Watch with the new silks tomorrow, a $9 chance. But Dino, Ben Battle's been popular on an each way basis, drawn barrier one, and a runner that adds a lot of intrigue to the race and potentially the Cox Plate.
Yeah, he does. This is, I think, outside of Winx's appearances, this might be one of the races of the spring. This is a fantastic field and brings together so many different good horses from different form lines. I think the backing for Ben Battle would be on the fact that he's probably going to lead from barrier one. Horses like Sedanza and Holmesman will come across from out wider, but certainly think he'll use that draw to advantage, and for that reason I think he's a chance, and he's a high-class horse as well. But I don't know which way you go here. I was very taken with the performances of Holmesman and Tosin Basil in the Underwood. I think this is a step up again, but both horses will probably be even fitter for that run at the 1800 metres. Unforgotten, she is an absolute star. First go here in Melbourne, 2,000 metres. I think she's right in the race. As I said, I think Ben Battle's a great chance. Humidor's ticking over beautifully for another go at the Cox Plate. The Cliffs of Mohar, this is a very good horse. Weather 2,000 around. Caulfield's going to suit him, but he reminds me a bit of last year's horse, Johannes Vermeer. He's going to be very strong, I think, and Johannes Vermeer ran second in this race last year, and I haven't even mentioned D'Argento, who's coming off a very good run in the Epsom. So it's just an unbelievable race. I've got a slight leaning to Holmesman, but I don't have a very firm opinion here at all.
A lot of these runners will go into the Cox Plate, the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup. Is there one that you want to follow for one of those big three races on the back of what they do tomorrow?
Yeah, one that I haven't put in the tips, Night's Watch. I think if he runs fairly well at weight for age, he's got the big weight drop next week into the Caulfield Cup. So if he can run top five tomorrow at weight for age with 59 back down to 52 in the Caulfield Cup, he's a player.
It's screaming F at me for the quaddie, Dino.
I'm not an F player usually, but I'm not disagreeing with you, Scotty.
Right.
Okay. I don't know if Sedanza can win. There you go.
There you go. What about Invictus Prince? Maybe we drop two of them.
Oh, he ran second to Winx a few starts back, so
126 to 1.
Yeah.
Dino, if Unforgotten wins, where does it go? Does it go to the Caulfield Cup, please, or the Cox Plate?
Well, you're pleading to the wrong person, Rammer. I've got no say there, but I think it'll go to the Cox Plate somehow.
Oh, don't.
Some editorial work from Rammer in the racing segment.
I like
very strong.
Oh, he's very passionate about Unforgotten.
All right, so race eight, we're pretty much going with everyone.
As many as you can afford.
Okay, so that is race eight. Okay, the third leg, the Caulfield Guineas, obviously over 1,600 metres, $2 million up for grabs. And we do get to see a potential superstar of the Australian turf here, Quinny.
Yeah, the Autumn Sun. He could be undefeated in five career starts to date. He's 4 from 5 with one luckless performance, and he dominates the market now at $1.90. Native Soldier, a 6.50 second elect. Leonardo da Vinci at 9. Uhud, the filly in the field, has been 15 into 10. The Autumn Sun, though, now an odds-on favourite. Dino, clearly the one to beat in your eyes, or are there a couple of little question marks potentially getting around Caulfield for the first time?
Not so much Caulfield, but the barrier draw, where he lands in the run. That's the only thing. He's clearly the best horse. I think this is a fairly even and average guineas, but he is an exceptional horse. He would measure up in any year. He's just got to... He doesn't have great tactical speed early, so he's going to be dictated to a little bit early. That's the little worry. If he gets clear running from about the 500, I think he'll just wind up and win. If he was to be beaten, I wouldn't be surprised if the filly Uhud, who has always run against the boys, so don't have any worries about her taking on the males. She's run placings in Blue Diamonds, Golden Slippers, Size Produce. She's been there and done that against the males, so there's no problem there, and she's run well at Caulfield, as I said, in a Blue Diamond. I think she'll run well. And Native Soldier, because he'll make his own luck, I'm going to put him in the quaddie. They're the three. But if you're taking a chance and you wanted to trim one up, obviously the Autumn Sun's the one to beat.
Geez, Whitey will be upset. The Stud Stakes form just not really high in your opinion.
No, it's a bit disrespectful there from Dean Bolitho.
Oh, well, you can ask about the questions about that in a minute, Adam.
All right, fair enough. So that's pretty much it? Just those three?
That's it for me. Yeah, and if you were really taking a chance, obviously I think the Autumn Sun's the one to beat.
All right.
Native Soldier each way. If you get $2 a place, yep, it'll be in front, won't it, Dino, at the 200, 150, 100 probably.
He reminds me a bit of Rich Enough a few years ago, yeah. Scotty. You know, if he runs, like, he'll be there with 100 to go. It's just whether he can hang on or if the Autumn Sun gets held up.
Yep.
Yeah, so and that's what happened a few years ago with Rich Enough. He just got caught on the line. But
give me $2, Nick.
Oh, absolutely. How much would you like on?
500.
Beautiful. I'll go take the 210 currently available and get myself a nice little cream on top.
And you use your multiplier.
Yes. Get to 11.
All right. So let's get to the last leg of the quaddie. And the Herbert Power Stakes over 2,400 metres. As you said, Dano, this is a significant race for a number of different reasons. But before your thoughts, Quinny, the odds?
Brigham Rock's soft at the top of the market. Has been 460 out to 550. Big Duke, a 650 second elect. Rising Red at 7. Gallic Chieftain's been well back, 14 into 850. Stablemate, or not stablemate, fellow OTI runner Lord Fandango also at 9. But Dano, looks a very tricky way to end the quaddie.
Yeah, it does. And we've got a lot of the internationals here as well, which just complicates it a little bit. But I think Rising Red's tracking towards a win. His two runs in have been terrific. The run in the Naturalism was outstanding back towards the inside. He's got tactical speed here. I think that there's a group out wide that'll come across quickly. Pillow Desire probably lead that group across with a horse like the Lord Mayor, Rising Red, and then out wide Brigham Rock. So I think they'll get across pretty quickly. I think he's got a great winning chance, Rising Red, and to get himself into the Caulfield Cup next week. Gallic Chieftain placed in this race last year. I think he's going better this year. His run in the JRA Cup was excellent. Lord Fandango won this race last year. His first up run off a break was tremendous. I think he's right in the mix. And of the internationals, I'd be putting Yucatan in number 7. I think he might be the best chance. The others, to me, look really dour. 3,200-metre horses. This horse might have a bit more dash. And he's certainly the interesting runner of the internationals. But, yeah, principally 9, 5, 6, 7 for me.
Any questions there, Quinny or Scotty?
Odeon, Dino, starting to tick over. Slowly?
He's a chance. He was unlucky the other day, and he's got the Rising Red form, so he's the next one in. I was just trying to trim it a little bit, and he's a good chance. He needs another win, but this is his last throw at the stumps to get into the Caulfield Cup as well.
We've done the quaddie legs. We're going to put the numbers up on our Twitter page, which is RSN Breakfast, but they are just numbers at this stage, and then what will happen is Dean will formalise those selections, and tomorrow from 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, it's part of the Melbourne panel, he'll go through and pretty much rank all his selections. So we'll do that, and we might even just read them out before we end the program here as well. Now, Brad Ruwiller will join us shortly. He's the lucrative jockey in focus for this week. He's got a couple of key rides going into tomorrow, but we haven't got to a couple of other races outside the quaddie legs, and the obvious one is the 1,000 Guineas, which is race 6 on the program. Before we get Dino's thoughts, so Quinny, what are the odds for the 1,000 Guineas?
Hopefully the winner has been well backed here. Smart Melody 3 into 260, the dominant favourite at that quote. Eldorado Dreaming Stablemate to the favourite has been quite popular as well at $7 on the third line of betting. Thrillster at 6, but Smart Melody clearly the best backed on what could be a massive day for James McDonald.
Smart Melody, 1-1-1-1-1. That's a real picket fence, Dino. Will it be another one?
I think it might be, Adam. I was wanting to try and pick holes in her form, but she was brilliant winning last start. And yes, I thought Thrillster was outstanding and Eldorado Dreaming were outstanding behind her. But from barrier two, James McDonald's just got all the right options here, and so many of these have just drawn ordinary gates and will need a bit of luck, whereas he's just going to be straight down to the rug, giving himself every chance, and I think she'll probably win. I think if the dangers are the horses that finished behind her last start, and Eldorado Dreaming and Thrillster. Both are very good fillies, and good little roughie getting towards the Oaks. I think Quafilla's ticking over well, and it's finally drawn a good barrier, and don't know if she can win tomorrow, but she could certainly get into the placings at a price. But Smart Melody's the one to beat for me.
With Smart Melody, would you say that she's probably not a 1,600-metre horse, but she'll probably just get the job done on class from the soft draw?
Yeah, I think that's the key. She was gunned very early last start, and then if you look after the line, she was still holding them well and truly. So I think she'll run a good enough mile to beat these fillies.
Oh, I'm in love with her.
Yeah.
That Flemington win, that just got me that down the straight. Can we freshen her up for the Coolmore?
Oh, I hope so. You? I think, yeah, well, I would be, yeah.
Only three once.
Yes, I like this.
All right. The Scalacci Stakes is the other one we wanted to look at for all the sprinters, obviously. Quinny, odds here?
Competitive betting race. The best backed runner is Voodoo Lad, who does head the market now at a $3.70 chance and hopefully can get the job done out there for Brad Ruwilla, who we'll be speaking to in a sec. There's been a little bit of money around for Snitty Kitty on the second line of betting at $4.60. Then we have Spirit of Valor at $7, Miss Rock at $8, and the other runner at $8, Ball of Muscle, who's having a terrific campaign. But Voodoo Lad, Dino, you mentioned this horse as a potential Everest runner, so I dare say you're going to be pretty confident tomorrow.
Oh, he's got a good chance. He's going to settle near enough to last, and he always needs luck, but he's such a strong horse at the end of 1,100 metres, and he's got a great winning record, so he's going to be somewhere in the finish again. I think he's I like one at odds here. I like Savannah Amour. I thought ran very nicely in the Moyer Stakes. She's got a great Caulfield record. I think the race sets up so well. You've got Snitty Kitty, Ball of Muscle will be the leaders. I think Savannah Amour, if she can just hold her spot behind there, fourth, fifth, I think second up, she's great value to beat Voodoo Lad. Interesting with all the internationals here. We don't usually see their sprinters. Probably Fleet Review, I thought, was the pick of them, but I've only got it in as a place chance. But I'll be playing the race around numbers 12 and 2.
All right, so that's race 5, the Scalacci Stakes. Now, a very important time now throughout the course of the Spring Carnival is the jockey in focus for our superannuation partner, Lucrative Super, because every Australian deserves financial dignity. And we have got the jockey who will ride Voodoo Lad tomorrow in the Scalacci Stakes in Brad Ruwilla on the line for us. Brad, thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Adam.
Now, it looks like you've got a couple of key runners for today. Scott Gallen is going to grill you in this segment.
Grill?
We're really looking forward to this.
Now, Voodoo Lad, Brad.
Yep.
As Dino said, it gets back. There's a lot of pace. Snitty Kitty, you'll be flying along. Are you going to need some luck?
Oh, look, for sure. We might be in a sort of a sticky situation at some stage where we're drawn, the way the speed is. Yeah, we're going to be needing to get him into the clear. He flies at Caulfield, and he's in great form and really looking forward to the challenge.
Drawn barrier 5, so it's, you're right, he's won 4 of 7 at Caulfield. Different horse there.
Yeah, he just, pure and simple, he hasn't run a bad race there, and he was terrific last time. Really stiff not to win, and you know, obviously that horse is in the race again, and I'd be happy to take him on. That's, you know, look, he's well placed, and you know, definitely that extra bit of pressure should only suit him well, I would have thought.
And then over to the Guineas, you got Leonardo da Vinci. Now, Whitey loves the Stud Stakes form. He lives by it, and this was a huge win the other night at Moonee Valley.
Yeah, it was. Look, he was really good. I mean, to be fair, Michael Brooks, $31 in the race, and that sort of says something about the field tonight. On that night, wasn't as strong as maybe it, you know, could have been. But how he done it was very impressive. Sort of twice down the side, I sort of had him lit up, ready to fire, and I had to sort of shut him down again and wait for the run. And sort of after, you know, basically making two runs, he then was able to sprint and just. Win soft. So he's had a run at the mile, and you know, look, he's just a lovely horse, and look, there's no doubt the Autumn Sun has got the form on the board, you know, against the best 3-year-olds at the moment. But my bloke's still on the up, and he's if we can get a little bit of luck from the barrier, very excited about his chance.
Well, you've drawn 10. The Autumn Sun's in 5. Where do you think Autumn Sun and you will be in the run?
Well, look, Autumn Sun, that he's going to be back in the field. I mean, yeah. he might try and use the barrier to some extent, but I'd be liking the fact that we should be in front of him, and still it will be important that we get in and get a rest at some stage. But he's going to need some luck at the Autumn Sun. I guess a little bit like Fertile Lad at some stage, he's just going to need to be getting in the clear, and if he's getting nailed up, and you just don't know. I mean, if they're running around 33 and he's going to make up 6 or 7 lengths, well, might be a tough ask. So who knows? We'll find that out when we get to the race tomorrow and how the track's racing. There's still a bit of water to go under the bridge, so we'll cross that path when we get to it tomorrow.
Hey, Brad, thanks for joining us this morning, the day before such a big day of racing, and good luck. And just with that Stud Stakes form, I think there's no doubt that it'll be at least a top three finish, so good luck.
No, I appreciate it. And what about how good were the Aussies to check out a draw last night? It was pretty impressive.
How much of it did you watch?
Of course I did.
Yeah, of course you did. The whole lot, right to the end?
Right to the end. You can't... it was just fantastic. Yeah, the Aussies, big strong, and paying his effort to stay aboard. So, that was all very, very, very good.
Nah, absolutely. Thanks for that, Brad. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Adam.
Brad Rawilla, who is a massive cricket fan, and did stay up till 12:22 to watch it until the end. So there's his two big rides for tomorrow: Voodoo Lad, race 5, number 9, and then Leonardo da Vinci, race 9, number 4 in the Guineas. So, Dino, as we wrap things up, just listening to that, did that give you sort of any confidence or any reservations on those two key chances?
Oh, no, Voodoo Lad, I mean, you know what you're going to get is a good run. Caulfield just... needs to get through traffic. If he does, he can win. And, I know how confident you are in Leonardo da Vinci, so we'll see what happens.
Just probably taking on one of the best three-year-olds that's ever been, but that's okay.
Now, the Everestino, we know it's been wet up there. It looks pretty even if you're not a Red Zeal fan.
Yeah, I think both the Friedman horses have set up well. I think they've had great preparations in Santa Ana Lane and Shoals. I think they've both got terrific chances, and I'm really interested that Osborne Bulls has got into the field. I think he's an up-and-comer, and a few of these have just stagnated a little bit. I think he'll run really well at a good price, Osborne Bulls.
Osborne Bulls currently at $16. Red Zell, the defending Tab Everest champion, a $6.50 favourite. And Santa Ana Lane, he's always big odds. Again, the case tomorrow at $8.50. The fascinating runner for mine, Jungle Edge, currently in the Sydney Stakes, but Mick Bell hoping to still get a start in the Everest with a scratching, and Jack Martin would take the ride if he does.
Well, you want him to sing or something? You're very excited.
He's a magnificent singer.
Yeah, well, guitar player too.
There we go. He's really? Going to join me on air and sing a song if Jungle Edge wins a race tomorrow.
A race.
Yes, because he's in the Sydney Stakes if he doesn't get a start in the Everest.
All right, let's formalise the best bets and all of that now. We'll start with George. Now, unfortunately, George. Has some pressing commitments.
We'll start with George over Dean.
Unavailable to be on the radio this morning. So we are going with George first, but he has sent through his numbers.
He's gone out on a limb
via
too,
telegram. Race 5, number 2, Voodoo Lad, into race 6, number 5,
wow.
Smart Melody.
That's $1.10.
George's selections. He has also got a strike 2 for not being available for
the radio.
I think
he's on his last legs.
Official warning.
Official warning.
Yes.
Your coffee bet, please, Nick Quinn.
I'm sticking with Smart Melody. I think 260, a lovely way to turn 20 into 52.
Right, simple as that. Fair enough.
As if you're only having 20 on. Yeah, keep going.
Now the most important part, the formula bet, Dino, for Caulfield Guineas Day.
Yeah, for Chris Fugel of Delacombe. And for Chris, we're having a $40 win bet on the much-talked-about race 6, number 5, Smart Melody, into $40 the win race 7, number 5, Land of Plenty, and $40 on the all-up of the pair of fives. Race 6, number 5, into race 7, number 5, for Chris Fugel of Delacombe.
The all-up comes to $16.90. Mark Guest, James McDonald's manager, has just messaged me saying, bit concerned you and George are both tipping Smart Melody. Now that Dino is, hopefully that brings him back on side.
Well, we got a little prize for our contestant last week too. I think $192.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, hopefully bigger fish tomorrow.
We have a special guest in our studio. Former Australian fast bowler, all-rounder.
Leading commentator.
Absolutely. Fox Sports star, John Hastings. Welcome.
Morning. Morning. How are we?
Hastings. Ducks of water in the commentary box. Can I just say that off the top?
Say whatever you like.
Cheers, mate. Sensational.
No, it's been great. It's been very, very good to cover the JLT, that's for sure. There's a lot of good young cricketers coming out.
All right. Yourself.
Mm.
Now, you were meant to be playing cricket this year for the Sydney Sixers. Now, we were all a little bit flat about the fact that you've gone from the Melbourne Stars to the Sydney Sixers, back to almost like a State of Origin type of situation.
Traitor.
You're supposed to be playing for the Sydney Sixers.
Yep.
Are you going to be playing for the Sydney Sixers?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's something that over the last probably 3 or 4 months has been a really difficult period for me. I've gone through a bit of a stage where I've been having these, well, it's a bit of a health issue, I guess. It's basically every time that I've sort of been trying to gear up and get ready to bowl, I've been coughing up blood. So basically gone through an extensive amount of testing, had some operations, bronchoscopes, all this sort of thing, angiogram, stress tests, everything to try and find out what the problem is. And they can't... What's happened is basically I won't be bowling, able to bowl this year or probably moving forward unless this sort of situation gets sorted out. And it's just something that they can't say, look, you're not going to have a fatal bleed on the field you know, it's not going to cause long-term damage. So it's pretty shattering. It's something that you just... I've come to terms with it now, but, you know, over the last sort of 4 or 5 months, it's been a very, very tough period. That's something that, you know, I've played this game my whole life and I wanted to keep playing it. I wanted to play tournaments all around the world. That's one of the reasons why I retired early from one day and 4 day cricket. But to see it maybe slipping away, it's pretty tough to take. And, you know, at this stage, unless something miraculous happens, I won't be able to bowl. It's literally just bowling. It's not running. It's not, I can do boxing, weight sessions, rowing, anything like that. But as soon as the pressure at the crease of match intensity, when I step it up, I just burst blood vessels in my lungs and it, you know, walk back to my mark and, yeah, cough up some blood. So it's pretty scary. But they can't tell me for sure that it's not going to cause long-term damage or so that, you know, there's a lot of grey area surrounding it. But, yeah, it's not a very nice thing to have happen at the moment.
So is this a new thing or is this something that has progressively got worse over a period of time?
Yeah, it's something that's sort of progressively gotten worse.
So when did it first happen?
Oh, a few years ago I sort of had little episodes maybe once a season for a year or two. I didn't really think anything of it. Taken a lot of anti-inflammatories over my time, so I just thought, you know, I might have had an upset stomach or something like that, but... Over the last 4 or 5 months, it's just progressively gotten worse, and it's gotten down to every time I'm bowling now, it's, you know, it's happening. So it's gotten to a point where it's pretty scary to have that sort of thing happen. So yeah, it's something. Look, I mean, I feel really sorry for the Sydney Sixers as well because and Jody Hawkins up there has been absolutely fantastic in helping me out and guiding me through the process, but I just feel sorry for them. I don't really know anyone in that environment, apart from growing up in New South Wales as a kid. But, yeah, I mean, they've been awesome. But I just feel sorry for them because they signed me fit, firing, ready to go. And this problem's just, yeah, it's just started, sort of popped out of nowhere.
So you went to the doctor and you said, look, this is what's happening. You sort of go about the top of the mark, cough up a bit of blood, wipe it away. Can you help me? I mean, it's not like you'd done a hamstring or anything like that. And that's how the conversation started and it progressively has got worse.
Yeah, that's exactly how it started. It was literally just gone in. Piers Canty at the Ethworth did an amazing job trying to help me through the process as well. It's just, yeah, I mean, it's such a strange thing.
And hasn't been diagnosed as anything particular.
This is what's happening. But it's just the uncertainty around not knowing whether any long-term damage could be, you know, a side effect, I guess, or, you know, fatally bleeding on the field. So I suppose it's a bit like a racehorse. When they bleed, I suppose they can't talk, can they? So you don't really know what's going on with them. But, yeah, and there's all sorts of tests that they wanted to do that were quite invasive, and I wasn't overly comfortable with some of them. Well, there was only two, really. There was three options. Was stop bowling, and there was a couple of other ones that were I won't go into. But, yeah, it was just such a strange situation.
So how do you feel yourself? I mean, you talked about you feel like you've let the Sydney Sixers down, but as you said, you stopped playing first-class cricket to try and look after your body to give yourself a chance to play for 2, 3, 4, 5 years on the international T20 scene where you're not making a superannuation as such, but yeah. This is a chance to set up your family for the rest of your life. How tough's it been for you?
Yeah, it has. It's been really tough. A lot of mates have been around. My wife's been enormous. My management team's been exceptionally good. Tony Box and Jared Sholley have been very, very good. Just trying to figure out a solution, and just trying to work through the process. It is what it is, but unfortunately, to have something slip away that you've worked so hard for over your entire life, it was pretty hard to take.
And you've been not necessarily hiding this, but it's been a bit of a secret now for a while that only very few people have known about. So we really appreciate you sharing this with us today. Mm. But you're going to have teammates, former teammates, potentially listening to this, having no idea that this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I've tried to sort of keep it pretty under wraps. I'm a pretty honest bloke and I hate sort of trying to hide things from people, so apologies to everyone over the last sort of couple of months who I've said I'm really looking forward to Big Bash, but it's been pretty tough. But the important thing is I've been cleared of anything massively sinister, so, I'm healthy, I'm okay. It's just, I can't bowl for the next, foreseeable future, so until I get... Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to find answers, but unfortunately at the moment it's not looking good.
You're still going to wield the willow in great cricket and keep ticking over?
I don't know. I'll probably have to find a job soon. So
No, don't do that. Don't go into the real world.
Yeah, I'll probably have to. That's something that, I can still bat, still field and still have a leadership role sort of somewhere. So that's something that I'm sort of weighing up and I'll have a bit more in-depth think about it. The last 3 weeks, dipping my toe into the commentary scene's been fantastic. Right. I've really, really enjoyed that. So we'll see how that goes. And, there's still a lot of things that I need to try and, sort out from that sort of side of things as well.
Now, we've been keen to catch up with Todd Woodbridge for a couple of weeks because we keep getting these really good results in tennis. We've got an amazing amount of men inside the top 100. The women continue to fire as well. What's happening as Don joins us this morning? Todd, can you fill us in? What's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys. Boy, you've got a big panel going this morning.
It is a big panel. Good
morning, what's going on? I just having a quick look at Matty Evans' ranking. He's ranked 51 this week, and he's going to go higher now after reaching the Master Series quarters overnight. So he's won a coach in the quarters, and that'll mean we've got 4 men in the top 50, which I don't know how long we've got to go back to have had that happen. So, why has that happened? I think it's over a series of time now where we've built some numbers back up again, and then there's a couple of guys like a Nick Kyrgios and then Alex de Minaur, who's just played so well this year. They're bringing other players with them. So guys are looking at them going, if you can do that, so can I. And that's where numbers become so crucial because there's an element of belief that pulls everybody else along. And for so long, we struggled with, really Leighton just hanging on and no one able to get up there with him. So it's a really good time. And that's a time when now we've got to keep focusing on the generations below to make sure we maintain those numbers.
Alex de Minaur is the one that's sort of capturing the imagination of everybody, probably because of the way he plays more than anything else, because it is almost a replica of Leighton Hewitt. Have you been surprised at how quickly he's sort of gone from a talented young player to a serious young player?
Yes and no. And when I say yes, is that the game's so much more physical than it was, say, 20 years ago. And by that, I mean, the points are longer. They play really hard laterally across the baseline. But I'm not surprised because his skill level is greater than a lot of young players today. And one of my sort of gripes about the modern game is that because a lot of the coaching is focused on if you can hit big and hard and just be a big athlete at the back of the court, you'll go well. But then we've sort of stopped teaching the nuances of the four-quarter tennis and touch and feel and learning how to break your opponent down and be creative. And that's what Alex has always had. I first saw him as a 12-year-old in Europe and had a couple of hits with him. And he had a good size backhand, great touch with drop shots. And that, for me, is one of the reasons he's been able to get there. The other part, of course, is his attitude. His relentless pursuit of just trying his backside off every point is paying huge dividends.
And Todd, what about Matty Ebden? He's 30 years old at the moment, and obviously he's had this form surge, obviously beating Dominic Thiem recently. Are you surprised, or did you expect this type of tennis? And probably furthermore to that, it seems to me now that players are able to play longer in their careers, John Millman, for example, and get better still.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think you can put Matty Ebden's result down a bit to John Millman, like I said, about being pulled along in recent times at least. One of the things with Matty is he always had a really great counter-punching game and was able to compete and run. He's a really good athlete, but he wasn't always able to finish off matches. So it was great this week to see him beat Thiem in a tough match, especially after losing a tight second set and then come out and win the third. So with Matty, though, yeah, it's interesting. I don't know that I thought that he'd still be able to find another gear in his game than what he has found. And look, that's the change in the mentality of the players out on tour. Because, I mean, I retired at 34 and I was old. That was sort of the limit that you had at that point. Whereas, you know, Roger and these guys are saying, okay, well, 37, 38, maybe even 39 is okay. You don't have to be finished by then. And so the physical side of the game where players are maturing, like not so much maturing later, but they are fully mature and able to cope with the rigours of it, is starting to show. So Matty Ebden is a great example for a lot of our players to show that, and John Millman, to show that, you know, if you can just keep your attitude right, good things will happen.
We're going to talk some cricket now with Meg Lanning, Australian superstar cricketer. She's back from her shoulder injury. She performed straight away in the recent series against New Zealand, and now she gears up for a T20 World Cup, and the squad's been announced, and Meg is going to captain it. Meg, congratulations on getting back not only on the field, but straight back into the captaincy.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a good series against New Zealand. We were keen to start off the summer well, and it was nice to get that 3-0 whitewash.
And from your own point of view, be able to get back out there and do everything you did before your shoulder issue and even look better. Has it come back quicker than you thought it would?
It did take me a little while. I had that series over in India where I think it took me 3 or 4 innings to get back into it. But I feel like I've had a good winter and a good pre-season under my belt now. And the shoulder's really strong and going well, so I don't have to think about that too much now, which is nice, and I can just go out there and play. So, yeah, I feel like my game's in a good spot.
No, you girls are flying, Meg. It's Haysto here. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Very well. What I wanted to ask you about is that new style of game plan that you've got, sort of going hard at the top of the order in the power play, and yourself sliding down to 5 and Elise Perry down to 7. Seems to be working.
Yeah, it's sort of part of the evolving part of our game, I guess, that, you know, the T20 format. We sort of realised we probably need to try and make the most of the power play as much as we can, and we've got, you know, 8 opening batters potentially in our lineup, so it's just about how we use them the best. And so far the formula that we've gone with has worked pretty well, but at the same time, depending on the game situation, myself, Rachel or Pez can slide up the order as well. So we feel like we've got a good balance and some good variety in there to make sure we can adapt to the situation.
Now, Australia doesn't hold a World Cup, well, hasn't held one since 2009, so that must be a bit of a driving force behind, you know, going over to Malaysia, playing some good cricket and then hopefully having a good World Cup.
Yeah, it is, that's for sure. We haven't been as successful as we would have liked over the last few years. So, the World Cup last year was very disappointing and certainly hurt us individually and collectively. So we're very driven to make sure we try and get the results that we want. So I feel like our squad's in a really good spot. We've been playing some good cricket now. It's just about making sure we put it out on the park once the World Cup comes around.
Meg, there was a couple of inclusions to the squad. Nicole Bolton at 29 has got a gig. She hasn't played a lot of T20 cricket for Australia.
She hasn't, no, but she's also been one who's you know, been able to add to her game over the last 12 months. You know, she was traditionally a 50-over player only, but she's been able to add some new shots to her game and be able to get that strike rate up, which is what we're after. So she's done a great job to put herself in contention and, yeah, looking forward to having her join us.
And, Meg, it's the first standalone T20 World Cup. So what does that mean for the women's game?
I think it just shows how much it's grown over the last few years. And we have generally jumped on the back of the men's tournaments, and I think that's worked really well. But now I think we can sort of hold our own, and hopefully you know, this tournament goes really well over in the West Indies, and it's a sign of things to come. So we're really looking forward to being part of it.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.